Welcome to the Quickening Report. Patrick Wood here, your host for today. We're going to continue to talk a little bit today about the financial crisis that's going on right now. Again, this is a dated thing because 6 months from now, we may not have a financial crisis like we have today, or it could be much worse, who knows. But today, in any case, is March 15, 2023. And the financial crisis is really just unfolding from last week with the very sudden collapse of a bank in Silicon Valley called the Silicon Valley Bank. It was a large bank. In fact, the fact that it did collapse, it became the second largest bank in history in America that ever collapsed. And so this is a big deal. No matter how anybody tries to downplay it, it's a pretty big deal. And there's a couple of things, a couple of angles that we need to really talk about. We're going to talk about China and China's involvement with Silicon Valley Bank. And we're going to talk about a little bit about the government's involvement with China as well, because there's an interesting triangle here that I just spotted. And I think it needs to be discussed. I'm just going to throw out a few things for you to chew on. I want to say right up front, too, if there has never been a time when my latest book, The Evil Twins of Technocracy and Transhumanism, there's never been a time in the last 20 years at least that a book was so prescient as to what's happening today. Because in my view, this is part of the Great Reset that Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum have promised us, saying that the COVID debacle was the perfect opportunity to spring the Great Reset on the world. They were very open about it. And for some time now, I think probably for a year, I've been talking about the so-called polycrisis of doom, all of the different things that are facing us right now as a country. Well, in the world too, we've been facing a financial crisis, we've been facing an energy crisis, and we've been facing a food crisis as well, all at the same time. I don't remember in my history where we've ever had all three of those converge into what I call the polycrisis of doom. But we have been trying to put a finger on what trigger would be used to spark the destruction of capitalism and free market economics, because that's what technocracy wants. This has been a moral hazard since the very beginning of technocracy in the early 1930s, when the Great Depression was alive and well. It was a horrible time in history. And of course, capitalism didn't die. It went on to recover, and it did for several decades. But now, as technocracy rises to ascendancy in the world, they have a problem. The problem is their system of a resource-based economic system is not compatible at all with capitalism and free market economics. That's why there has been a moral hazard or a predisposition to do things that would destroy capitalism and free market economics in the world, only to make way for the resource-based system. The United Nations calls it, by the way, sustainable development, but it is warmed over technocracy from the 1930s. We have traced how that happened, how it came back into the current political economic scene through the auspices of the Trilateral Commission in the early 1970s. Through the 1992 Rio de Janeiro conference that introduced sustainable development to the world. All of that policy was part of the new international economic order promoted by the Trilateral Commission. And now to today, where we see technocracy, the tentacles of technocracy all over the world. It's not political, it's economic primarily. Although they use the political system to their advantage when they can. But if they had their druthers, they would rather just completely take out the political system altogether and just get rid of it. And that their idea is that their science is so good and so settled that they don't need to have any discussion about anything. So we're going to look at a couple of things here today and see if we can put some dots together. And so I'm going to lead you through some stories. And this is very, very... It's becoming more clear, let me put it that way. I won't say it's totally clear yet. That would be inappropriate, but it's getting very clear. And the first thing I want to point out is that China is a technocracy. I just need to revisit this. A couple of years ago, I wrote The 12 Days of Technocracy. I did it kind of off kind of modeled after the 12 days of Christmas. But one Christmas season a couple of years ago, I decided, hey, why not just write an article a day for 12 days, and we'll call it the 12 days of technocracy instead of the 12 days of Christmas. So I did that. Day 7 in that series was specifically titled, China is a Technocracy. And I want to point this out just so that you understand a little bit where I'm going with this. Back in 1978-79, when I co-authored Trilaterals Over Washington with the late Professor Anthony Sutton, we wrote several papers actually on China and what Brzezinski was trying to do with China when he brought Deng Xiaoping, the chairman of China at the time, over to America to essentially bring them back onto the world stage again. And so they themselves, the Trilateral Commission, wrote in their triangle papers some articles that dealt with China. And back then it was really pretty clear, but this is some of what we wrote at the time, in any case. Triangle paper number 15, written in 1978, page 57. This is what they wrote, not what I said. The paper wrote, to grant China favorable conditions and economic relations is definitely in the political interest of the West, adding, there seems to exist sufficient ways for aiding China in acceptable forms with advanced civilian technology. You see, China was built up by members of the Trilateral Commission. These people are still around, folks. They're still there. And we see them even more broadly with the membership of the World Economic Forum today, because that was also an offshoot of that early remaking of modern globalization back in the very early 1970s. So the World Economic Forum has followed in the footsteps of trilateral policy ever since. It is executing Trilateral Commission policy ever since. And so when they proposed back then that China was going to be built up, that is, created from scratch, there really was no economic system at that point, but they built up China by transferring Western technology to China and giving them everything they needed to create a technocratic system. We went on, and so as far as Communist China is concerned, we may conclude that trilaterals, and here was our conclusions from all the stuff we were reading, they want to build Communist China into a military superpower. I'm going to get this bigger for you. They want to build Communist China into a military superpower. Has that happened? Yes, absolutely, positively. Number two, they wish to do this with the full and clear understanding that China will likely resume its expansionist course in the Far East. Has it? Yes, absolutely, positively. There's no doubt. And number three, this was back in the days of still of war going on in Thailand and Malaysia. They are willing to subsidize guerrilla activities in Thailand and Malaysia. Much of the quote-unquote civilian technology currently being transferred has usefulness for guerrilla warfare. Now, they knew that back then, but that's what we concluded. They understood that any technology that was transferred to China was going to be used to prosecute wars in Asia. Has that happened? Yes, it did. Absolutely. It's historical now. It's history now. So, in hindsight, you know, as I wrote in this later article, it's clear that we absolutely nailed the issue. It wasn't that we were so smart, but that we were simply reading what they themselves wrote, and we just simply reported on it. We're just reporters, that's all. So then in the year 2001, this is really critical. In 2001, Time Magazine published an article called, unappropriately probably, Made in China, The Revenge of the Nerds. If you just looked at the title, you would never have a clue about what the article was about, truly. But Time Magazine was one of those early publications that was allowed to join the Trilateral Commission membership, and it was the chairman of Time, Hedley Donovan, actually the editor-in-chief, who joined the Trilateral Commission. They were allowed to attend the meetings, and Donovan did, but they were not allowed to write about it. By the year 2001, they were all of a sudden a little bit more free with what they were writing. I think that was because they were kind of released from their gag order by David Rockefeller. So this story, Revenge of the Nerds, clearly points out that China is a technocracy in the historical context that I have been saying from the 1930s for years now. In that article, and you can, by the way, this is in my article, of course, day seven, right? China is a technocracy. You can go and read that on technocracy.news. During the 1980s, technocracy as a concept was much talked about. Now, what happened in the 1980s? That was Deng Xiaoping, and that was Zbigniew Brzezinski. Technocracy as a concept was much talked about, especially in the context of so-called neo-authoritarianism, the principle at the heart of the Asian development model that South Korea, Singapore, and Taiwan had pursued with apparent success. The basic beliefs and assumptions of the technocrats were laid out quite plainly. Now, here it is. Social and economic problems were akin to engineering problems and could be understood, addressed, and eventually solved as such. It goes on, the open hostility to religion that Beijing exhibits at times, most notably in its obsessive drive to stamp out the evil cult of Falun Gong, has pre-Marxist roots. And this is what they wrote in Time magazine. Listen, scientism underlies the post-Mao technocracy, and it is the orthodoxy against which heresies are measured. Scientism is at the root, they said. Time magazine, speaking of China, said scientism is at the root of it, and that China had morphed into a technocracy. So with that in mind, you know, technocracy, China's technocracy today is in full bloom. We know that. We've talked about that in other issues and articles. And I don't want to go into that any further at this point to point out how China is behaving as a technocracy. We understand, for instance, social credit scoring system. We understand the 600 million cameras that are installed with AI facial recognition software to track everybody all the time throughout China. But we don't need to go into that any deeper for the sake of what we're going to say here. Just recently now, this is a recent article I found in Breitbart. In fact, this was dated March 14. That's just one day ago from this broadcast. Xi Jinping says China will be active in reforming global governance. Now, you say, well, what's this all about? Why is he making these kinds of statements just after the financial collapse of one of the largest banks that impacts China? It just makes you question, what's he up to here? What's he up to? Well, China is saying, what he's saying is that China is going to be a partner or an actor, a proactive actor in global governance. Well, who's global governance? Well, that's the United Nations and the World Economic Forum. If China's a technocracy, and if the UN is a technocracy, and if the Great Reset is technocracy, do you see what I'm saying here? All of these people are looking at the same technocracy and saying, yes, this is going to result in a system of global governance. In China's mind, their model is, of course, global governance, or governance means we will control you, period. And they're being controlled by, you know, by algorithm, by their social credit scoring system, etc. So, you know, not to say anything nice about Xi Jinping at all. This article just kind of lays it out. It says that he's a third time president now. He gets elected, but is it really elected? No, probably not. But Xi is a class A1 technocrat for sure. And as you would go down and look at this, you see his conciliatory and his firm stance that he's saying that China is ready to take its place, its proper place on the world stage, and it will do so as a technocracy. Now, another article that came along just alongside of this that caught my eye, which was really, I thought was pretty useful as well. You remember all the riots with Black Lives Matter from a couple of years ago, especially during COVID. And it was very destructive to society. But here's the interesting thing. The same technocratic corporations that are taking nourishment from the World Economic Forum, those same corporations, for instance, headed by a company, by, you know, big hedge funds like BlackRock, for instance, that seems to want to own all the world in the end, but they're a huge, huge company. It's been discovered now, somebody went through and did the study, added it all up, that Black Lives Matter received $82.9 billion from corporations. $82.9 billion with a B dollars from corporations. And you go down in here, I'm not going to look through it all, but you go down in here and you see, oh, what corporations would do this, such a thing? Well, my goodness, you've got companies like Amazon, you've got Allstate, you've got AT&T, they gave $21.5 million, United Airlines, JetBlue, Southwest Airlines, Bank of America, the list goes on. BlackRock gave a shocking, listen to this, BlackRock gave a shocking $810 million towards BLM and related causes. You have to ask the question, okay, what's going on here? Well, I have said for a long time that BLM is a front, kind of a pseudo-Marxist organization whose only value to the technocrats is to destroy the fabric of society, to take down America, to take down the greatest engine of free market economics the world has ever seen. This is now evidenced by the fact that BLM got all of its money from, and virtually, I mean, where else would they get money? That honestly, they would get money from nowhere. But people wondered, they sure seem organized. Well, yeah, they're organized. If they had $83 billion at their disposal, say over a period of 2 or 3 years, they could do virtually anything they wanted to do. They could hire anybody they wanted to do. They could hire protests. They could manufacture the entire thing. They could do public relations campaigns, and they did. But the technocrats that are feeding China are the same technocrats that are feeding Black Lives Matter. Now, this connects an important dot. You see, the people at the top of this whole global reset, great reset into technocracy and sustainable development, these people have been working together to try and figure out ways to crush America and crush free market economics that we represent. Now, back to China just for a minute. Here's the headline. Chinese companies and founders rush to calm investors after SVP, Silicon Valley Bank, collapse. Chinese companies and founders, not just America, said, well, there's something going on here. Silicon Valley Bank had a very special relationship with China. Most people really didn't pay much attention to this, but they did. And it's important to see this. It says that that Silicon Valley Bank, which worked with nearly half of all venture backed tech and healthcare companies in the United States. I said, wow, half? Were they that big? That they were embedded in all these tech startup companies that are turning out billionaires left and right? Yes, that's it. It said before it was taken over by the government, has a Chinese joint venture, which was set up in 2012 and targeted the country's tech elite. The SPD Silicon Valley Bank, which was owned 50-50 by a Silicon Valley Bank, and local partner Shanghai Pudong Development Bank said Saturday this operations were sound. Of course, they're trying to backpedal and make everybody calm. That's the point of the article. But okay, so you see that they have something very special going on with China. And of course, our government has something going on with China too. And you consider President Biden himself, and you consider his son, Hunter Biden. Yes, they have significant dealings and have gotten significant money from China. And you can imagine, I suppose, you could imagine that when Silicon Valley Bank went down and all of a sudden all these companies in China are affected because they borrowed money from and had investments in or from SVB, that a little call, a little message went out to President Biden. You better backstop this, dude. because if you don't backstop this, we're going to be very upset. That may or may not happen. I'm just speculating that they might have gotten a phone call like that. You could see it happening because they have their hands into the Biden family's pockets, apparently, for a long time. So the subtitle of this article, "The Now Failed SVB Carved Out a Unique Role in the Chinese Banking Scene." Okay, well, what is that role? Yes, indeed. Starting at the top here, before it became infamous for the weaknesses on its balance sheet, Silicon Valley Bank was known for the strength of its ties to the tech industry. So adept was SVB at serving the venture startup ecosystem that it eventually took that expertise overseas. Now, here's the big tell on this. The crown jewel of its global operations was China, where it served more than 2,000 clients and advised government regulators eager to make their banking system more innovation-friendly. Dave Jones, a 23-year SVB veteran who served as the chief credit officer, this is probably the guy responsible for getting into trouble, this is what he said. We're a model bank for China, said Dave Jones, before being dispatched to run the bank's China operations, and he operates the China operations. So he said that in 2019. Then he goes on, he says, there have been times when the Chinese government has specifically referenced us in regulatory documents, he added. Jones has since retired, but remained on the board of SVB's joint venture in China. He declined to be interviewed for this article. Yeah, no kidding. He declined. He's probably in hiding somewhere or installed protective bars and windows on his basement in his house so he could hide out. What SVB offered in China was unique to a market where banks tend to be conservative, small business lenders. The Santa Clara, California-based bank was willing to make uncollateralized loans to unprofitable firms because it understood their business and funding sources. Now, like their counterparts in the U.S., many of those Chinese clients are left weighing their options in the wake of the Silicon Valley Bank's collapse, while Chinese regulators seek to minimize the damage from a mini-crisis, not of their own making. They're calling it a mini-crisis. It's more than a mini-crisis, let me tell you. So, the article goes on. You might want to check this article out on Breitbart. You just search for it. It's on today's news feed. And you can check it out a little bit more. But this is, as they say, this is more than just another bank failure. The Chinese government likes to trade markets access for cutting-edge technologies and processes. In this case, officials were tutored by SVB on how to use banking to spark innovation on the home front. So there's this very tight relationship between Silicon Valley Bank and China. This has been working for a long time. We also know that China and Silicon Valley have had a very cozy relationship for a long time. Why would that be, you ask? Well, if birds of a feather flock together, you would expect that technocrats in China would be very interested in dealing with technocrats in Silicon Valley. This makes perfect sense. This is also why China and Chinese diplomats and companies have no problem working with the World Economic Forum or the United Nations for that matter. In fact, the UN basically is controlled by China right now. They're very influential in the United Nations activities from top to bottom. So if birds of a feather flock together, you would expect that technocrats on both sides of the oceans, whether Atlantic or Pacific, would have a camaraderie that is unique to them, but not to us, because we are not technocrats. We don't seek to overthrow the world system and create this new system of technocracy. That is not us, that's them. But they do apparently have a very cozy relationship. And now if China has been established as a technocracy, and if we know that Klaus Schwab and the WEF are headed that way, and we know that up until the war in Ukraine that Russia was bent that way as well, Now it might make a little more sense what's going on here if there is an orchestrated endeavor, an orchestrated push to put for China to work with these other technocrats to put pressure on our economic system, on capitalism itself. This would make sense. Would China sacrifice a few small startup companies? And of course, China could backstop its own companies too. But would China sacrifice a few pawns in order to get some knights and bishops and maybe even the queen? Yes, they would. They're strategists of the top order in the world for sure. I don't think they would hesitate to do that. Now, I realize what I'm saying here is a little bit of speculation, but we can establish very firmly that technocracy runs through all of these things, all of these people. What Silicon Valley Bank did was really, really stupid. It was really ignorant. The way they loaned money on uncollateralized loans to Chinese investors or Chinese companies, that's pretty crazy. I don't think anybody would come up with that idea other than them, because you may never see your money again. It's not a very good risk. Most banks in America, as you know, if you go to buy a house, your house becomes a collateral for the loan. That's just common sense. In banking, you want to have collateral for the loans that you make. Well, SVB apparently didn't care. Now, they did some very dumb things along the way, no doubt. But kind of removing Silicon Valley Bank from the picture here and their mismanagement, why didn't regulators catch the fragility and all that kind of stuff? Just kind of move that away just for a second and look at the bigger picture of who are the technocrats playing in this game right now. Just imagine, like a big poker game, and they're all sitting around the table. You've got China in one chair. You've got the Biden family in another chair, perhaps. You've got the World Economic Forum in another chair. And you've got the United Nations in another chair. And they're all having this big poker game to broker up the world. And I suppose that you could say Russia's at that table, too. Because before the Ukrainian war, Russia was right there. They were right there knocking on the door to technocracy as well. So these are things to think about. And, there's no way we can make totally definitive statements right now, but this is important stuff to understand. I think we're going to see the story come out that China has a much bigger role in this. And where they're headed with their global governance right now, that's going to be the $64 question. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for The Quickening Report. Thanks for watching today. I hope this helps a little bit to understand what's going on. We'll see you next time. This story is not done, and I'm sure there'll be more to say in days to come. So stay tuned. Pass the channel around. Tell people to sign in and to, come listen to it. In the meantime, take care and God bless.